Hey guys, I'm Ricardo Powell. Welcome to the 124 Not Out podcast. And joining me as usual is my co-host in life, aka Legend Agent. What's up, Queen?
Hey guys, I'm good, King. How are you doing?
Couldn't be better. Looking forward to this great show today.
Me too. But before we get into that, to the show, let's remind our viewers that we are available at 124 Not Out. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, go to our websites, 124notout.com, bashatv.com, ricardopaul.com, we're global. Hello, let's go. What's up? What are we talking about today?
Well, today is a very interesting topic, and it's a topic, records versus riches, which to me is on the lips of many people in this world in terms of wanting to know about what it is in terms of this day and age in cricket, records versus riches. What would you choose? What would you do?
I like that topic.
For me, in terms of when I look at something like this, I think about like, who would I want to have on the show to discuss something like this? And in your opinion, I mean, you would need somebody experienced, somebody who has played maybe all format of the game.
You need a top cricketer.
A top cricketer.
To discuss this big topic.
So we had to really go into the vault and really search and see who we could find.
Oh, come on. Stop keeping us in suspense, Ricardo Powell. Just come with it. Who do you have for us today?
Today we have with us the man himself from Australia. He has played a numerous amount of game, over 100 ODIs, over 100 T20 cricket. He has played test cricket for Australia. He was the captain of the ODI team. And the T20 team. He was the man, I'm going to give it away now if you really know who it is. He was the man to win Australia's first T20 World Cup.
Oh my God.
So I'm going to welcome the man himself, Aaron Finch, one of the coolest dudes on the planet.
Welcome, Finchy.
Hi guys, how are you?
Welcome to America. Virtually.
Yeah, virtually. I haven't spent a huge amount of time there, but last year, the opportunity that I had was about 6 or 7 weeks, and I loved it. Yes. And I can't wait to get back for the start of the World Cup either.
Oh, we can't wait to see you here and to have you back. Welcome. Yeah. Y'all give it up for Aaron Finch.
Welcome, Finchy. Thank you for being here, buddy. It's a pleasure to have you. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I know that. Yes. I mean, you were definitely, as I said, looking forward to coming back to America with World Cup playing here. You know, it's something special for, I think, the cricketing world, just to see cricket and this landscape in America. World Cup, after 1 year of playing Major League, and now World Cup the second year. And for me, it is just one of those things that I have watched you whilst playing against Australia in the past, watching you and the way you have played your game on and off the field, and the kind of guy that you are. I mean, it's something special for me to have you on the show. So thank you again for being here. And one of the main questions I would want to ask you as we get into it is, like, you know, playing the game, who do you think or who do you feel aspire you the most?
Inspire.
Sorry?
I know you meant to say inspire. You said aspire.
Yeah, inspire you the most in your career. I mean, to play for Australia, to captain the ODI team, to captain the T20 team, and to play test cricket. Like, that's a whole different kind of cricket in terms of all levels. Most people get to play one format or maybe two. But your inspiration in terms of playing all format and to be able to play them at the best level and perform so well, you must have had some really good people around you to really push you and motivate you during this time.
Well, that's a really good question. And I'll answer it in two parts. I think growing up where I did and having an unbelievable family support network, I think was really important. We had, I was one of four siblings, two older brothers and a younger sister. So I was always inspired and pushed, I guess, by my second brother, who we used to have fights and play. He was 3 years older. So I always wanted to play with him. with his mates, with whether it was AFL football or cricket. I just wanted to be around, I guess, the older kids because they were a little bit better. I was a naturally quite a talented cricketer, so I wanted to play against the older kids. So that was something that I guess inspired me along the way. And then you had, I grew up in the country, in country Victoria, which can be a little bit rough. That's not the right word, but it's just as an 11-year-old, you're playing senior cricket with men. And I don't think that a huge amount of people from the city get that opportunity to do it. So you're constantly around people that are better than you in the game. So someone who has an ego or has drive in them,
yeah,
you just want to be better and better and better. And I guess once I started to, I guess, play in representative sides and things like that, there was no one thing or one person that inspired or I aspired to be like, because so much of the stuff that you do is self-driven and so much is reliant on you being the one to say, you know what, no, I'll go and do this today. It's not always about somebody cracking the whip. It's totally different in I guess, to individual sports where you're only accountable to yourself. Yeah, if you don't go and train and you don't perform, mm-hmm. you're the only person to blame. Whereas in a team sport where it's you're reliant on each other. So 11 plays 11 in a game of cricket. And there's days when I know that it's happened and there's days when I know that it hasn't, when I haven't prepared as well as I possibly could have for the game, no matter what it was, whether it's sleep, whether it's food, alcohol, whatever it might be. And then you fail the next day and you feel so shit because you know that everybody else is putting in all the work and you have let the team down. So that's a shocking feeling. So I think so much of it is self-driven to do the right thing, not just by yourself, but by your teammates. And I guess that becomes a little bit more complex as you start to move into the franchise space and into the space where you don't have any base to go back to in terms of a state cricket program in Australia or a county program in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's all on yourself. It's all on you to hit enough balls to make sure that you're ready. So early on, family, definitely. But after that, and once I moved away and started to become professional, there's days when you doubt yourself, no doubt. And there's days I'm not cut out for this. I'm not good enough. So you just have to keep trying to be better every day yourself, as opposed to waiting for somebody else to inspire you, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question in a roundabout way.
Yeah, I think it does in many ways. And you mentioned something in your reply where you spoke about, you know, growing up in the country and at a very young age, you know that you had that talent. And typically players like yourself, players like the Chris Gayles, the guys like the Marlon Samuels and all these guys who grew up in different parts of their respective country. The ones who are mostly and very talented typically work the least in terms of they put out less because they know that they're talented. But when you come from that country and you have to go to the big city like the Sydney and all these places to play against the big names, you feel intimidated. But typically these are the guys like yourself who come through for Australia and are the landmark players, because you have to work twice as hard to really make it. And you know, once you get in, you can lose that spot just like that. So you work even harder when you get there to prove a point that, hey, not because I'm from Tasmania or from Auckland, wherever it is.
Or Perth.
You know, I can be just as good as any of the other big name guys from the city. So I think those are the stories I like to hear that inspire really all young players who, wherever they are in Australia or anywhere else in the world, that not because you're from here means that you can't make it. Yes, it might be a little bit harder, but that toughness and that grit really is what you need at the next level. Would you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes back to when I think I followed the exact Cricket Australia pathway through to play three formats of the game for Australia. So I played in the Victorian under-12s team, the primary schools team. And then once you're there, you're in the system. But I remember going to the trials for that, and you go into Melbourne, to the city, and it's like these kids are so much better. And I always had that feeling right throughout my career. I was always somebody who thought, like, I'm batting with David Warner. I'm batting with Steve Smith. I'm batting with Michael Clarke or Shane Watson. Like, how am I doing this? How am I on the same page as these guys?
As these guys.
And I guess it just comes down to your upbringing as well, where you'd never take anything for granted. You're always really grounded because, and I think a big part of it is it playing against adults, playing against men from when you're so young, that you're a whipping boy for so long until you prove yourself, but then you become a part of it, right? So I think that drive and that just something in the back of your mind just says, well, why? How have I ended up here? I've come from a small country town of 15,000 people, 2 hours west of Melbourne, and I've somehow managed to make it to...
What's
to be
the name of your town?
MCG. Cola. C-O-L-A-C.
Cola. Okay. Sweet.
It's just in the back of your mind every now and then, I guess, that you just keep thinking, wow, like this has to be a dream. Like, yes, I've put in a lot of hard work, and my family sacrificed a lot when I was growing up to be able to take me to a lot of the trainings and trials and tryouts and just being able to afford going on interstate trips for a representative team and stuff. And you get quite complacent with it when you're a youngster, when you're in your teens, and you think it's just normal. And you jump in the car at 4 a.m. and dad's got the car packed, and then you come home and you go to bed because you're absolutely cooked.
You take it for granted,
Do take it for granted, and you don't realize the sacrifice that they're making with three other kids there as well. I mean, my younger sister's 9 years younger, so she spent much of her upbringing being
watching cricket,
being dragged around to cricket grounds and tryouts, and but it's been really cool. I wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah. I can tell you that much, though.
But you know, Finchy, good for you that you recognize the sacrifices that other members of your family made. Sometimes people just recognize the sacrifice that the parents have made, but they don't recognize that other siblings were kind of, when the parents realize this is the one that's most talented, let's all go with him. You know, it's kind of rough. But I think this is a good segue for us to also get to the topic and go into a segment we call International versus Riches. And which is the reason why Ricardo felt that you're the best guy for this topic. What advice would you give to young players aspiring to achieve both records and financial riches in their career? Because now we're living at a time, as you know, you played in the franchise era, but you're still an international cricketer. And even now with legends and so on, you know, franchise is taking over. What advice would you give do you choose the record or do you choose the riches? We got a thumbs up for that. what advice? What's your advice?
Well, that's a really difficult question. And I think there's a couple of different ways you can look at it. Yes, you can, talented young players who get their opportunity in franchise cricket are going to make a lot of money, no doubt, as long as they've got the game and they can sustain it. But one thing you have to remember is that you're probably three good tournaments away, particularly as a youngster who doesn't have the backing of 10 years of international cricket to fall back on, or the reputation that people keep saying, you know what, we'll take him one more time. Hopefully he'll get it right next time. You're probably three good tournaments away from being out of a job. So, and that's something that I don't think people take into account enough. It's reality. The franchise world is brutal. It's cutthroat. So my advice would be get your grounding. And that's coming from an Australian. And I can say, comparatively to a lot of the countries around the world, we're very well paid. So I understand that it might be a slightly different decision. So that makes it a different discussion if you're from somewhere that you don't have the cricket infrastructure that Australia's got. And we've been so lucky right throughout my career. Cricket Australia have been brilliant, and so has the Players Association, the ACA. They've been outstanding at making sure that there's retirement funds and stuff set up for players, and all the healthcare is taken care of, and mental health Everything's just there on a plate for you to be successful on and off the field. So my advice for somebody in a world where you're getting remunerated well enough is that if you're an international player, you get recognized around the world regardless. That will increase your opportunities. And then when the time's right, potentially into your 30s, when your international career might be dying off, then that's your time to cash in. But mm-hmm. I think the international game is so important mm-hmm. for personally for you.
We're having a bit of a lull right now.
Yeah.
I just want to remind our viewers that Aaron Finch is coming to us from India, where he's currently commentating
and traveling for IPL.
So
it's a little bit.
We're gonna have to give him some time to get back in. But I just wanted to correct an error that I also made while I was introducing this segment. I said, I don't know what I said, but it's international versus franchise. And I think I mixed it up with the topic today.
Hello.
You are back. I just want to remind our viewers that we're talking about records versus riches. Yeah. Not seeing Aaron yet, but, you know, Ricardo, I wanted to ask you as well, like, you know, comment that it's so weird that all the cricketers that we've had on so far has said international. Are you back, Aaron?
Finch is back. I'm back. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Sorry, let me just finish that answer quickly. I think if I think of an example of something like a person like that recently, it's Trent Bolt.
Okay.
He's worked away for 10 years in international cricket. He's been one of the world's best for such a long time.
Yeah.
And he couldn't achieve much more in the game personally. So then it gets to a point where you're prioritising your family time, like your time at home with your family. And the franchise space does allow that a little bit more. So then he says, do you mind if I don't play for New Zealand? I want to play franchise cricket because that will give me a longer shelf life as a player, but also it'll set me up as well. And then if New Zealand come calling, he will still be available for that. So I think that there's a real balance between it as well. So it's not just something that you can, that's so hard to put in one basket. I mean, I got asked about it the other day about Jake Fraser-McGurk, who's a real rise in the last 6 months, I guess. And someone said, oh, should he just play franchise? I'm like, no, because you get the grounding of a state system in Australia. Yes, he's played for Australia. Yes, he will continue to play for Australia. But you also take away the infrastructure that's made you a good player as well. Like, I mean, when you're playing international cricket and you come back to your state, you've got all the facilities, all the physios, all the treatment.
Correct.
Someone to throw your balls, the training facilities, the medical facilities, gym facilities. So you're able to hit enough balls day in, day out to stay up to speed. When you go to the franchise system, it's totally reliant on yourself. So you have to organize that yourself.
Never thought about that.
Some things might get in the way of your preparation leading into a tournament. So then you turn up to a tournament underdone. And especially for the young guys who have got not a real long time of base underneath them. So different if you're in your 30s and you've got 15 years of hitting 10,000 balls a week underneath mm-hmm. you can turn up to a tournament underprepared and perform because it becomes muscle memory. These kids are still working out their game. So continue to groove it, continue to grind, and then play the franchise and take up the opportunities when they fit into your schedule while you're still playing, because it's great. You get to meet amazing people and do some really cool things. So there's a balance of both.
Finchie, you're so grounded. I want to meet your parents one day. I swear to you. Like, I mean, don't tell Bradley this. My husband knows. But don't tell Bradley, but you are my favorite Australian cricketer of all time. Okay? You are so grounded. No, serious. People, I mean.
Yeah.
You and I see your hard work. You still work hard like you never got it. Like you didn't achieve anything. Like I see you with the Legends and Masters, and I see you on the grind. Like you think that you would lose something, and you've done so much. Like your parents are awesome, and I'm sure your wife is amazing as well.
I think
the whip. But that's all right. What did you say? Sorry about that.
She's the one that cracks the whip, and and says, yeah, right, time to come home now. You've been away too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. That was one of my questions I was going to get into as you touch on that, in terms of just being able to balance that family life as an international athlete and someone like you who, you know, you've played so much for Australia. The demands on you is so much, like, yes, you've played over maybe close to 300 games internationally for Australia. So therefore, you would have been on the road for a very long time. And now here comes franchise cricket when you're supposed to so-called retire. Legends is here. The flexibility is there, yes, where you can take your family, but still you have kids who are in school. You have a life there. Your wife has her own life, what she's doing. How do you balance? How do you balance that? How do you really maneuver that?
Well, it's been a transition, actually, from when I retired from international cricket and even Big Bash to then just play legend and commentate. So last year was a really good test case for it all, because I retired and I wanted to go headfirst into commentary, because I felt as though you can't dip your toe into it if you haven't, or if you don't commit fully first up, it'll be really tough, because you need... It's like a player. The first game that you turn up and you commentate, you feel a little bit rusty. Yeah. But again, I've had no backing of commentary. So I'm like the kid playing franchise cricket without the base underneath, right?
Yeah.
So we made a conscious effort and we said, we'll take all the opportunities we can get and we'll dive in head first. And that will mean it's tougher this year, or this is meaning last year. And it'll be tougher because I'll be away more. And traveling a lot while I'm away. So it's then harder for my wife, Amy, and at the time it was an under 2-year-old. So to have an under 2-year-old traveling around is not practical. So then this year came along and I did the IPL. I'm at the IPL at the moment. I'm going to do the World Cup, a Legends League in Sri Lanka, one in the US. And then that will be pretty much, in the UK. And then that will be it until the home summer. So, and they're going to come to the UK and there's a bit more flexibility in that regard, but you have to appreciate what they're doing at home as well. And that's something that is easier said than done, because when you're away, you get into the grind of, right, I'm in Mumbai today, I'm in Lucknow tomorrow, and then the day after I'm in Chennai, and life can go past pretty fast without you thinking too much about the grind that they're on at home, the hamster wheel that just keeps going around. And when you're trying to do it by yourself, like my wife is with a 2.5-year-old who's got some serious attitude and sass.
I met her in Florida. She's a handful.
You should see her now. She's big and she's funny as hell. But yeah. I mean, all up, it's about, I guess when I met Amy, that was 11 years ago now, I was already playing cricket for Australia.
Yeah.
So the lifestyle of me being away quite a bit was natural in our relationship. I think it might be more difficult and have its challenges for people who are together and then the international or franchise cricket comes, and then it blows their mind as a couple or a relationship. Yeah. You're going to be away for 8 weeks. How do you do that when I've got to work? Yeah. And so we're really lucky in that regard. And it's still difficult. Don't get me wrong. It's still very difficult at times. And that's not lost on me how hard she works at home to run our household. And I think that she appreciates that I'm over here trying to forge a new career, albeit in the same field, but a new path. And keep the household ticking along as well. Yeah,
I'm happy to hear you appreciate your wife's hard work like that.
If I have to be at home for a day by myself with Esther, I get to the end of the day and I'm absolutely buggered. I'm like, how do you do this every day? She's like, you got no choice. You just get on with it.
Get on with it.
And then I pack my bags and go. It's difficult, no doubt, but. Yeah, it's definitely not, it's not without its appreciation.
Appreciate that woman. Before we get into the next segment, I still want to ask you this quickly, because we have some fans who want to talk to you. But before we get into that segment, do you think, would you say international cricketers based on the cricket landscape right now with franchise cricket, should retire earlier to pursue franchise cricket, a franchise cricket career, particularly when they've had a good base in international, based on your previous answers?
Well, that's such a personal decision. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's one right or wrong, because not all, if we're being honest, not all international cricketers have the demand in the domestic franchise space as well that some others do. So then someone might say, you know what, I'm going to go and make myself available, and then they don't get picked.
Yeah.
And then what do you do? And then you've thrown away your career. So it's a really fine balance, and it has to be an individual one, because a lot of time, as you would know as the legend agent, a lot of players can get sold down the garden path as well. They everyone wants them before it comes time to make the decision to take them.
Yeah.
So then there's been times there's been times when guys say, oh yeah, I've got four franchises, they're all fighting over me, and then none of them take them. So then they're like, well, was it true? Well, no, it's not. Maybe at the time they thought it was, but something better come along. And that's the reality of the franchise space.
Yeah, yeah.
Well said.
It's cut short. Like,
I could not have said it better myself. Well said. Well, that's a good segue to take us into this segment called Asking for a Fan. I'm asking for a fan. And a fan wants to ask you this question, Aaron. First question from the fan is question one. Fan from India.
From India.
Hi, I'm Shubrata from Chennai. Which cricketer inspired you most
while growing up? Okay, we got kind of. Which cricketer inspired you most while growing up?
Well, being a Victorian and from Victoria, had some very good players. Dean Jones, the late great Dean Jones, was one of them, who I guess wasn't the only Australian batter at the time, but he fought hard to create a career in it for Australia. He was a great player. And then once sort of he retired, then it was Brad Hodge, another Victorian who worked so hard for Victoria for a long time, over 15 years or 12 years, and played all around the world before he got his opportunity for Australia. So that were my two growing up that I loved watching. And I even used to catch the train down to watch a Victorian Shield game, Sheffield Shield game. So it was pretty cool. And then to meet them and obviously play with Hodgie for quite a long time as well for Victoria and for Australia was really cool. So both of those guys were
guys that
I looked up to, but without knowing them, just purely as a fan of their
so game. You never met them eventually?
Not growing up. And then I worked a little bit with Dino, and then I played with Brad Hodge, and we've become really good friends since I was about 18, actually. So it's been really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
And before Baja goes into the next question, that was something for me, like when I first toured Australia back in 2001 at the Academy in Adelaide, that was something that I admire about Australian cricket, because guys like Hodge and Day, who still didn't play for Australia, the experience that they came in with at that stage of their career is like they walked in and they were right at the top, and they performed just as if they were there for many years. So Australia had a system that still worked to date, where their players are mature, they're experienced, and when they come in, there's no from here to here. It's almost like they come in at that same level to be able to perform across the board.
And I think at the time there was such competition for so few spots. I mean, the Australian team was so settled that once you got your opportunity, it was harder to get out of the team than it was to get in. Sorry, did I say that right?
Probably. It was harder to get out of the team than to get in.
Yeah, and getting in was brutal. I mean, when guys that were averaging 60, averaging 50 for 10 years, couldn't find a place in the side because, I mean, you had Langer, Hayden, Ricky Ponting, Damien Martin, Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, all these guys. Yeah. Like, they're legends of the game.
Yeah, the legends.
And they were so good that when once that opportunity presented itself, guys were just so desperate to take it, and they did.
Wow. Yeah. Well, let's see our second question from the fan.
My name is Tuvin Mitra. So which sport do you really like besides cricket?
Which sport do you really like besides cricket?
I love golf. I love golf. I love playing golf. I get a little bit addicted to it when I'm at home.
Yeah.
But like all things, and as you know, once a toddler's around, your demand, your want for how much you want to play gets severely hampered. So you have to find times, and I love everything about it. I will be bringing my clubs to Dallas when I come for the first World Cup game. So if anybody out there has got some contacts in Dallas to hook me up for a round of golf, let me know.
I'm sure they'll write to us and say, hey, can you tell Aaron Finch so-and-so?
Trust me, you will not be short of that. It's when you're in the U.S. as a golfer, you have so many courses to choose from wherever you go. So
yeah,
it's one of those sports where I felt that, like, after playing cricket, if I were to take that up full-time or a major interest, my wife would kill me because that takes so much time away from home.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm over here saying, where are we going with this?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. This brings us into our next question, and that's what's up. Good segue. And that's what's up. Nobody's playing golf over here, okay? Frequently.
So that's what's up in terms of I am keen to find out from Finchie in terms of, with the recent announcement of the Australia T20 World Cup squad with some of the big names being left out, how do you feel about the squad coming into America with new surfaces, you know, no one really know about these grounds, etc.? Do you think that the experience of the big names would have played a bigger part compared to the new team that they're looking at bringing to the T20 World Cup?
In other words, I want to know too in that question. I don't. is this looking like an Aussie final? That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I think all the tools are there. I think the decision to leave Steve Smith out was it's probably been made quite a while ago, just based on the selections over the past probably 7 or 8 months. And
yeah,
I mean, that just gets to a point in your career where the youngsters coming through are so talented and they're so good. And T20 cricket, what I've experienced here during the IPL, T20 cricket has changed in the last 12 months as well. And I don't expect it to translate into the international space just yet, but it definitely has. And so when you leave Steve Smith out of the squad, obviously there's going to be some questions. And I think he would be comfortable with that decision that they've gone with, just purely on the makeup of the squad. They've gone for some more power hitters. They feel as though Josh Inglis can play a similar role to what Steve Smith can and be the backup wicketkeeper as well, or the first choice wicketkeeper. So so that's where the decision was made. I think for Jake Fraser-McGurk, who's been on fire in the IPL, for him to miss out, I think would have been a tough decision, but also at the same time, that's a pretty small sample size. And when you're looking at David Warner's record in international or ICC events, it's pretty hard to go past that. And with him being maybe right, well, this will be his last tour for Australia, I've got no doubt about that. So it'll be, I think the experience that you need to win a World Cup and a little bit of the cowboy nature of the youngsters and guys who just go and flog it, I think that's needed as well. So I think Australia have found a really nice balance with, it'll be Travis Head at the top with David Warner, Mitch Marsh leading the side, Glenn Maxwell. So there's a lot of experience there. And then you look at the middle order, it'll be made up of Stoinis, Tim David, Matthew Wade, Josh Inglis, Cameron Green, whichever combinations they go with. There's enough experience.
Pretty solid.
There's enough youth. Then you've got Adam Zampa and Ashton Agar. Two brilliant options. They're both big ticks. And then the four quicks of Stark, Cummins, Hazelwood, Nathan Ellis. I think the squad picked itself in all seriousness. They've obviously got until the 25th of May to be able to make any adjustments to that for injuries or anything, but I don't suspect that it will unless someone's injured, and that'd be an obvious one.
Yeah.
You know, based on your response and based on some of the things you said earlier, Finch, regarding just this system, the cricket setup and structure in Australia, I would have to say that Australia could pick any side, really, at this point, based on what you and Ricardo said, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's been Australia's great strength in World Cups over the years. I mean, it's not the ability of any one individual player that wins you a World Cup. It's about how good you are as a team, how you function together, how the hierarchy within the team works, whether it's with senior players and younger players. Like, it is just such a great environment at the moment that anybody could walk in and feel 10 foot tall. And by doing that, you give them the best chance to perform. There's nothing worse than coming into a team and feeling like you have to prove yourself to anyone.
Yeah.
Everyone's played together. So the That's team amazing. Functions so smoothly.
That's amazing.
For media is always, not to cut you, Nirbhaja, but for media is always something special in terms of about the Australia team. No matter how maybe slow you see they might start or lose a couple of games here and there, once you see Australia team in the semifinal and final, you know exactly what's going to happen. And
you know what? Yeah, that's what's up.
It is something that I've always wanted to ask yourself or even Brett, like, what it is when you come to the final, regardless of whatever might have happened before, you guys just put that behind you and you know that you're in the final and you know how to win and this is what's going to happen at the end of the day.
It's amazing.
I think it's about doing your own job. So many people... it gets to a final and they want to be the one to win it. Cricket's not a one-person game. It's not a game of, like, NFL where the quarterback controls everything. This is a game where you need everybody to play their role and do their own job really well. Don't ever ask anybody to do more than what they're capable of or more than what they've done in the past. If that happens on the day, well, then it's brilliant. But don't expect it. Pick a team that you know everyone will commit to, and whether you win or lose, everyone will give it their all, as everybody will, any person would. But they'll just focus on their own job. I'm not going to be worried about what you guys are doing there in Atlanta at the moment, because I can't control that. All I can control is what I'm doing right now. And I think that's one of Australia's great strengths, is they just look at themselves and say, right, what does the game need me to do right now? What can I do to influence the game? But I'm not worried about anything else that's going on, because it's out of your control. Wow. And that burns so much mental energy. And there's days when you try and figure out what X, Y, and Z's doing, and you walk away and you haven't influenced anything because you can't, and you're absolutely mentally fried because you put too much emphasis on everything else.
I really hope the coach of the West Indies team is listening. I'm just saying, you know. No,
that's on point.
That's on point. That is that's coming from France.
West Indies have got a team of superstars.
Yeah. Aaron Finch, thank
players to do it.
Thank you for dropping some facts. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I'm soaking it all in, because it makes a lot of sense. And if other teams, not just West Indies, but Sri Lanka team, you know, South Africa team, if they all listen, because Australia has a secret sauce. Australia wins World Cup. I mean, we just proved that in India last year. You all could lose, but you win when it comes. And you've just set us how that happens. A team, not a team of stars, a team.
Yeah. I mean, for any player coming into any team, you don't want to have that pressure of feeling that, hey, this is on me alone. When you walk into a team knowing that this is a team that we're in here to win, and whatever contribution I have, it will help that team to win. And if you focus on that, the results take care of itself. And I think that is very profound in terms of how you break that down for us and for anyone who will be watching this podcast. I think it's something that is just legendary.
Well, if you think of, and I think back to the 50 over World Cup that was in India, and Pat Cummins, he always was asked about what would it be like to win the World Cup. And his answer was always pretty simple. If we win it, great. But if we don't, it's also fine, because we know what we're going to do. And they were so planned and process driven, the Australian team. Yes, two losses at the start, everybody wrote them off. That's fine. Because as experts and pundits of it, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But they didn't let their process and their plan, they set out a long time ago and planned out how they'd win the World Cup. So there's no point changing it after two games and throwing all that work out. That when there's no result on the line that everyone agrees to, that's how we'll win the World Cup. But then you lose a game and they say, oh, well, throw that out because we can win and we'll start over again. That's when you get the flow-on effect of things that just don't work, because you're trying to chase all the time. You're trying to chase. Whereas when you break it down and you say, right, nine games, how do we make the semi-final? Because that's the only important thing.
Make the semi-final.
You just have to make the semi-final. Correct. So then you plan it out. Right, okay, yeah, against this team, is there a chance to rest this player because we've got a couple of back-to-back games? And they stuck to the plan the whole way. And then you get to the final, and inside the dressing room, I know exactly what would have said. You know what? Hmm. Today we might win. Today we might lose. All we can do is try our best. That's okay.
Yeah.
And then you take the fear of failure, and you take the result, the fear of the result that can sometimes cripple players when they get out on the ground, that they tense up and they can't think clearly because all they think about is the result, and they focus on the result instead of step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that's got you into that situation. Wow. So,
wow.
That comes back to the environment. I think it comes back to life in general, in terms of if you're in an environment where you can't strive, it's just not going to work. And that is a perfect environment to be in as a player.
Now, before we wrap up, because I've been getting the wrap-up sign 10 minutes ago, I cannot leave this podcast without asking Aaron Finch, what is your favorite food? And all your travels internationally as a cricketer and now commentator, which country would you say, which region would you get your best food outside of Australia, of course, because we don't want your wife to get angry.
Well, I do all the cooking at home when I'm at home.
Sweet.
Yeah. I love South Africa. I'm a big meat eater. So South Africa always is a brilliant tour for eating.
Yes.
Some great, great places. I mean, I've spent so much time in India that you come across some really cool things. Like a dal makhni, which is probably the most delicious thing in the world, but dal makhni? It's the most unhealthy. Yeah, but it's the most unhealthy thing in the world.
You lost me as unhealthy, okay?
It's butter and cream and ghee and everything.
No.
And lentils, and it is unbelievable.
I will pass.
Yeah, that's like once a trip.
And dal is supposed to be a healthy thing.
And dal is supposed to be healthy, but you lost it. You made it unhealthy with the butter and the ghee and the whatever else. Yeah.
Yeah. But Sri Lanka has some... Probably my favorite thing is a Sri Lankan prawn curry. That would be one of my favorite things to eat.
Sri Lanka has amazing food,
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Caribbean. I'm looking forward to, Dallas, obviously, in the US is barbecue. That hits me right where I love it.
Yeah.
And the Caribbean, I'm going to be in Barbados, St. Lucia, and Antigua. So I'm looking forward to getting out and about and sampling some good stuff.
It sounds like you love food and you don't have a favorite spot. You have your favorite spots.
I love eating. That's one of my favorite things, as you can probably tell.
No, I can't tell, but I love eating too. So I totally get it. I just want to remind everyone to follow us all on Instagram at 124nautile.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Facebook, TikTok, everywhere. And to follow Aaron on Aaron Finch 5 on his Instagram. And I guess you'll find everything else about him via Instagram. And guys, thank you, Aaron. Thank you so much for coming through
today.
Thank
you, Finchy.
Thank you for making this time. It was an honor. You dropped so much facts. I could talk to you for another hour. I'm sure you'll be back. So
let's do it
so
again much. Sometime.
Let's do it again sometime. And I just want to remind our viewers to keep watching, keep supporting. We love this game. You know, we love this. This is a podcast for top cricketers and
big topic.
He always forgets to say it. All right, guys. Always remember, you're God made, not man made. So only God can tell you no. It's your girl, Basha. That's the wrap. We're out. Cheers.
See you, guys.